Hello everyone, Daria here, and welcome to episode 33 of the Slow Russian Language Podcast. As you can hear, my voice is back, and today we finally can have a normal episode. And we continue speaking about the history of Russia today. It's part number 3, so if you missed the previous ones, maybe you should go to episodes 22 and 26 and listen to them first. As usual, first I read the text slowly, in slow Russian, and after that we translate it sentence by sentence and explain interesting vocabulary. So, here comes the text.
Россия в 15 веке. В исторической науке до сих пор идут споры о том, когда же Русь окончательно освободилась от монгольского ига. Считается, что начало было положено в 1380 году, когда московский князь Дмитрий Донской разгромил татаро-литовский отряд на Куликовом поле возле реки Дон. Однако всего 2 года спустя татарский хан Тахтамыш сжег Москву и заставил Дмитрия снова выплачивать монголам дань. Фактически Московская Русь продолжала находиться в зависимости до 1502 года, когда князь Иван III разгромил монгольское войско. Иван III был не только умелым военачальником, но и известным любителем культуры. Он женился на византийской принцессе Софье. Вместе с женой князь получил титул царя, двуглавого орла в качестве символа и нескольких талантливых мастеров. Например, именно эти мастера построили знаменитый Успенский собор в Москве, а также Московский Кремль в современном виде.
And that was it for the text. Now let's try to translate it. The name was Россия в 15 веке. Russia in the 15th century. And the first sentence.
В исторической науке до сих пор идут споры о том, когда же Русь окончательно освободилась от монгольского ига.
There are disputes in history about when Русь finally was freed from the Mongol yoke. You see here, историческая наука means history science, and of course you can say just история. История, историческая наука. It's the same. Interesting expression is идут споры. Спор means some dispute or maybe some argument. But here it's just disputes in general in history science.
Идут споры.
It means that there is no one point of view. There are many opinions about when Russia was freed from the Mongol yoke.
Идут споры.
For example, there are still disputes about how Marilyn Monroe died. In Russian, it's
до сих пор идут споры о том, как умерла Мерлин Монро. Идут споры.
So there is no truth here. No one knows how it happened. Okay, the next sentence.
Считается, что начало было положено в 1380 году. It's considered that the liberation started in 1380. Начало положено, it means that it began, it started. Началось. Было положено начало. It's just the synonym of началось. And the second part of this sentence. Когда московский князь Дмитрий Донской разгромил татарско-литовский отряд на Куликовом поле возле реки Дон. Pretty long one. When Moscow's prince Dmitry Donskoy defeated the Tatar-Lithuanian armies on the Kulikova battlefield near the river Don. This Dmitry Donskoy is very, very famous in Russian history. It's one of the main heroes of our history and everyone knows him. And interesting verb here, разгромить. Разгромить means not just to defeat, but to crush, to smash. If it's about some war, it means that they didn't just win, but they maybe destroyed their enemy completely. They crushed them. Also, it is very common for sports. For example, if the score is something like 3-1, 3-1, it's just to win. But if the score is something like 10-0, 10-0, it means разгромить. Let's imagine some fairy tale or, I don't know, some galaxy far, far away where Russian soccer team could defeat Brazil. So in Russian we would say российская футбольная команда разгромила Бразилию. Russian soccer team smashed Brazil or crushed Brazil. Maybe it was 20 goals. But unfortunately, it's not possible at all. So let's just get back to reality and translate the rest of this sentence. Татаро-литовская армия. Tatar-Lithuanian army. You see, Lithuanians started to hate us long ago, not just in the 20th century. We've been fighting with them for a long, long period of time. And this very famous battle, Битва на Куликовом поле, the battle on the Куликово field, it's very, very famous in Russia. You know, one of those key battles. And not so long ago, maybe a month ago, we were driving by that field and it's so small, it's tiny, so it's so hard to believe after all those great stories about this place that it's just so tiny and nothing special about it. Anyways, we're moving on. Однако, всего 2 года спустя татарский хан Тахтамыш сжег Москву и заставил Дмитрия снова выплачивать монголам дань. Yet, just 2 years later, the Tatar Khan Тахтамыш burned Moscow and forced Dmitry to pay the tribute again. 2 года спустя means через 2 года. 2 years later, 2 years after that. 2 года спустя. Interesting word here is дань. Дань, tribute. And it can have either a positive or negative meaning. Like here, it's negative. When someone conquers someone else, they make them pay money or maybe give them lands or some products or maybe even people. So they pay tribute. Они платят дань. So Russians used to pay that tribute to Mongols for several centuries. And if you listen to my previous history episode, you will see how terrible it was in our history. But also the word дань can be positive, like дань уважения, the tribute of respect, or дань памяти, tribute of memory. Especially it's very common for music. For example, tribute to Queen. Дань памяти группы Queen. Well, Queen is not the best example here, because actually they still work. I even attended their concert. I don't remember who sang there. I guess it was Adam Lambert. I'm not sure. Anyways, it's tribute to some famous band. Tribute or дань памяти, дань уважения какой-то группе. In this case, дань means something to commemorate someone. Okay, the next sentence. Фактически, Московская Русь продолжала находиться в зависимости до 1502 года, когда князь Иван III разгромил монгольское войско. In fact, Muscovite Rus was under the yoke until 1502, when Prince Ivan III defeated the Mongolian army. And this time, finally, completely. The very first word in this sentence, фактически, in fact. You hear that? Fact, фактически. So it's just almost the same, in fact. And again, this verb here, разгромил, Иван III, Ivan III, разгромил монгольское войско. Ivan III defeated and even crushed the Mongolian army. The interesting noun, войско, you hear that I translate it as army, but in Russian we have the word армия, of course. But when it comes to some old times, ancient times, maybe medieval period or even earlier, we use the word войско. Война, войско. If it's a modern time, we say армия. Российская армия. And in a medieval period, it's русское войско. Okay, the last part of this text. Иван III был не только умелым военачальником, но и известным любителем культуры. Ivan III was not just a skillful commander, but also a patron of culture. A pretty difficult noun here. Военачальник. And you know how many Russians have troubles with this word? And because they say военачальник. Because there is a temptation to combine two words, военный, military, and начальник, like a boss, a leader. For example, in the office, your boss is начальник. But it's not correct. This word is spelled like this, военачальник. There is no double на there. No, военачальник. So it means commander. For example, Alexander the Great was военачальник. Or Napoleon was военачальник. For example, the full sentence, Napoleon was a great commander. Наполеон был великолепным военачальником. Didn't end well for him, obviously, but still, he was great and hard to argue with that. What else here? Oh, любитель. Very interesting noun. You see that it comes from the verb любить, to love, to like, любить. And любитель, again, like with that word дань, it can have several meanings. First one is someone who likes something. Любитель. Любитель чего-то. For example, любитель женщин. He likes women very much. Он большой любитель женщин. Or maybe he likes to sleep. Он любитель поспать. Of course, you can say он любит спать. But it's more interesting, you know, it kind of enriches your language. Он любитель поспать. So in this sentence about Ivan III, he liked culture. Он был любителем культуры. He liked art and culture. Also, this very same word can mean amateur, someone not professional. For example, this task is for a professional, not for an amateur.
Это задание для профессионала, не для любителя.
Okay, and back to Ivan III.
Он женился на византийской принцессе Софии.
He married the Byzantine princess Sophia. And Byzantine, in Russian it's Византия, was the eastern part of the Roman Empire after it was divided. And it was a very powerful state. It was flourishing and all prosperity. And Ivan married famous princess Sophia to make connections with that state. And the next sentence.
Вместе с женой князь получил титул царя, двуглавого орла в качестве символа и нескольких талантливых мастеров.
Besides the wife, the prince also took the title of Tsar, the double-headed eagle as a symbol and a number of talented craftsmen. So you see, that's when we had our famous two-headed eagle as Russian main symbol. Double-headed eagle. You will see it everywhere in Russia. And also you see that Sofia brought several talented craftsmen with her. Because as you already know, technology was at a pretty low level after several centuries of being under the Mongol yoke. And the last sentence of this text.
Например, именно эти мастера построили знаменитый Успенский собор в Москве, а также Московский Кремль в современном виде.
For example, it was those craftsmen who built the Успенский Cathedral in Moscow and the Moscow Kremlin in its modern appearance. The Moscow Kremlin, I hope you know how it looks like and what it is. If you learn the Russian language, you certainly must be interested in Russian culture. For those who don't know, it's that red building on the Red Square. And this is where our president works every day. And many people don't know, but actually most of the time the Kremlin used to be white, built of white stones. And Ivan III was the first one who rebuilt it with red bricks. Anyways, even later in 18th century, it was very fashionable to have white buildings. So the walls were just colored with white. And actually, interesting fact is that Napoleon, who conquered Moscow in 1812, he saw Kremlin as white, not this famous red Kremlin. Okay, that was it for the vocabulary section, and now again, some of my listeners asked me to read this text one more time in full speed, so you can practice listening to real speed Russian. And here we go.
Россия в 15 веке. В исторической науке до сих пор идут споры о том, когда же Русь окончательно освободилась от монгольского ига. Считается, что начало было положено в 1380 году, когда московский князь Дмитрий Донской разгромил татаро-литовский отряд на Куликовом поле возле реки Дон. Однако всего два года спустя татарский хан Тахтамыш сжег Москву и заставил Дмитрия снова выплачивать монголам дань. Фактически, Московская Русь продолжала находиться в зависимости до 1502 года, когда князь Иван III разгромил монгольское войско. Иван III был не только умелым военачальником, но и известным любителем культуры. Он женился на византийской принцессе Софье. И вместе с женой князь получил титул царя, двуглавого орла в качестве символа и нескольких талантливых мастеров. Например, именно эти мастера построили знаменитый Успенский собор в Москве, а также Московский Кремль в современном виде.
And that was it. I hope you enjoyed. If you have any questions or any suggestions about how I can improve my podcast, please feel free to contact me on realrussianclub@gmail.com or on my website, realrussianclub.com. Always happy to see you there. For those who wait for my membership section on my website, I'm so sorry. I know I've been promising for several months to open it, but I hope before New Year I'll do that. I really, really hope. But in the end of the year, it's always a pretty tough time for teachers, so I have no time to work on this project now, unfortunately. Maybe a little later, maybe a couple of weeks later, I'll come back to that. What else? Don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. If you like listening to the slow Russian language, you will certainly enjoy several of my videos. Okay, I guess that was it for today. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope to see you in the next episode of the Slow Russian Language Podcast. Bye-bye!